Is it possible that you could gain a superpower that actually makes your life worse? And then we journey into the space between the places, the interdimensional rifts that separate this world from the next. Is it possible there is a race of predatory creatures that use paranormal phenomenon to trap human prey? Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. I hope you guys are having a great day too. Hope you guys have some cool plans for the weekend. It is New Year's Eve weekend. I don't know what I'm doing yet. I'm still not feeling great. I think you guys can hear that in my voice. And I just realized shortly before starting this podcast that the medicine my mother recommended to me, the one that I've been drinking every 4 hours since yesterday, is liquid Benadryl. I thought it was a different ingredient. I've been sleeping most of the day, and my waking hours have been a little weird. I haven't seen the shadow people yet, but I definitely have stopped drinking so much of this stuff. But someone who always loves hanging out with the shadow men, running into Dead Rabbit Radio Command, everyone get on your feet and give it up for Cat Girl. Woohoo, yeah, wee, woohoo, yay, yay, yay. Cat Girl is dancing around in Dead Rabbit Radio Command. Cat Girl recently signed up for the YouTube membership program. Really, really appreciate it. It's a monthly fee, but you get a little icon when you comment on videos, and the money helps support the show. So I really, really appreciate that, Cat Girl. You're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. If you guys can't support the show financially through the Patreon or YouTube memberships or the merch store, I truly understand. I do. Just help spread the word about Dead Rabbit Radio. That helps out so, so much. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone you know. Dead Rabbit Radio is your favorite paranormal show. Oh, and also let's talk about our Fan Art Friday submission. Let's take a look at this bad boy. We have submitted by Johnny Crimson. This is, he really didn't set up this photo for me. I'm assuming this is either a band rehearsal space or a recording studio. But whatever the case is, we got a Dead Rabbit Radio logo on the big screen, probably listening to an episode on YouTube. In front of the American flag, I don't know. That might actually be illegal. But I'm not going to turn you in. I'm just going to post your photo for the world to see. Your true allegiance is to Dead Rabbit Radio. And then maybe a giant picture of a fish in the background. That's not Dead Rabbit Radio related. I'm just curious why there's a giant fish there. And, though, I will say it's quite apt for this episode to have a giant fish. You'll find out in a big... Like, Jason, it's not a giant fish. I don't know why you think that. But Johnny Crimson, thank you so much for sending in that Fan Art Friday submission. I love it. Cat Girl, let's go ahead and get this party started. I'm going to go ahead and toss you the keys to the Hare hovercraft. Everyone climb on board as Cat Girl takes us out of Dead Rabbit Radio Command and hovers us all the way out to France. This story is actually about a Frenchman named Mark Liblin. And I gotta give a shout out to Fabio. He recommended this story a while back. This is a story that I had actually been familiar with over the years through paranormal research, but taking a second look at it made me see it from a different lens. So, Fabio, thanks for sending this over. We're about to meet this... Well, eventually he's a man. Right now he's a 6-year-old boy named Mark Liblin. And he's 6 years old. He's living in France. He's like, "Ooh, mommy, mommy, I had a bad dream last night." And they're like, "Little Mark, what did you, little Marky Mark, what did you dream about?" And he goes, "I dreamt an old man came to me and he taught me physics and taught me all sorts of wondrous things, but he taught it to me in a very weird language. And I can't get the language out of my head, Mom." She's like, "What? That's kind of a weird dream." And she was right. This was a weird dream. He continued to have these dreams for decades, apparently. Every night, I don't know if it was every night, you're like, "Oh man, can I just stay up? I don't want to go to physics class again." You're all like taking a bunch of caffeine pills. You're like, oh no, man, I have a test due. I have a test due tonight in my dream. No, my professor is so mean. He would have these dreams where this dude would teach him physics as well as this new language. And Mark learned to speak this language fluently, but he didn't know what language it was. It was a dream language. It didn't sound French. He knew that for sure. He couldn't figure out, though, what this language was, why this old man kept teaching him physics. He's like, I get it. Things that go up fall down. I get it. Gravity. Please, can I dream about a bikini model? I mean, I am getting older. I don't need to be doing all this physics stuff. And the teacher's like, no, you can save those dreams for in college. That's when you should be interested in bikini babes. Right now, we'll talk about more physics. Physics of how a bikini holds up a pair of boobs. Mark's like, my greatest hope and my worst fear combined. Physics. Nothing but physics and nothing but learning this new language. Which would suck. Listen, the physics would pay off, I think, at a certain point. You could probably go to a laboratory and Goodwill Hunting it. You could walk into a laboratory and they're like, well, doing stuff on chalkboards. And they're like, oh no, if this neutron gets any bigger, it'll possibly do something scientific. It's possible that something will happen. We don't know what it is. And Mark Liblin, he could walk in and be like, oh, well, I totally understand physics. And he could help him out with stuff. He can go, see that Apple Watch? I'm going to throw it up in the air. And the scientists are like, what comes next? What comes next? And Mark's like, I predict it will fall. And it does. And everyone's clapping. And they're like, man, you really know physics, don't you? And he's like, yeah. You could do that. You could pull all sorts of physics parlor tricks. But if you went to go get a real job in physics, they're going to ask, where's your college degree? Where'd you learn all this physics stuff? And if he goes, well, I learned it from Professor Sleepy Time, he's not going to get the job. If anything, he's going to get escorted off the premises by security. He would know all this physics stuff, but he didn't actually have a proper education in it. That's usable. This made-up language, this language that he cannot find anywhere, it's haunting him. He knows in his heart of hearts that it's a real language. He doesn't actually think that it is fictional, but all evidence he's being presented with in the real world is that it doesn't exist. And here's the thing. This is what I think so interesting about this story is we have a guy who is being given advanced knowledge. Because the language will turn out to be a real language. We will get to that in a second. He is being taught a real language in his dreams by an old man. He is also being taught real physics in his dreams by this old man. This old man is actually imparting true wisdom to this guy. But what do you think would happen to you if from age 6 until, you know, you're in your 30s, you kept having these dreams, being given this knowledge, and it's tormenting you. It truly is, because you're trying to figure out what this language is. By the time Mark is 33, in 1981, he's 33 years old, he is penniless, and he's scavenging for food in dumpsters. Because I would imagine it would be kind of hard to hold down a job if you're talking to your boss in a made-up language. Here's the thing. He had a really hard... Because he was so obsessed with finding out what this language was. He was learning a lot. He obviously learned a lot of physics in his dreams. But he was also, like, began to look into history and different cultures in the world. He began to travel a lot. And he was neglecting building those basic blocks to have a good job. Not just have a good job, have a job. Mark, you're late. You're late for the fourth time this week. Don't tell me it was the dreams again, Mark. He was like, well, actually, no. There was a symposium at the local museum on ancient languages, and I went to that instead. You know, he fired Mark. You're fired. You can't work here. I mean, that's cool. The pursuit of knowledge is great and all, but your shift started 3 hours ago. Not only was he broke, not only was he digging for food in a garbage can, okay, that's bad enough. At this point, he also had 2 kids. I think that's a little irresponsible, right? I mean, there's nothing you can do once they're born. I guess you could put them up for adoption. But if you want to, like, learn a lot, you still got to provide for your kids, and providing for your kids does not include grabbing Happy Meals out of a local dumpster. But he had two kids. I'm assuming the mom mostly took care of them. He's digging through dumpsters. He ends up in the back of a university restaurant. Like a college university had this canteen. I think it's like, you know, just like a little restaurant cafe. And he was digging through the garbage. And I don't, I mean, this is just coincidence. This just might be the wildest coincidence, most paranormal part, this whole story. As he's digging through the garbage, he ends up running into two linguist professors. I don't know if they were like walking by the dumpster and they're like, oh, I heard the neatest Tahitian lullaby. And the other guy's like, oh, yes, but the Croatian Pledge of Allegiance is much better. They're all talking about nerdy language stuff. And Mark Liblin jumps out covered in garbage. He's holding two Happy Meals. He goes, oh, my kids are going to be so happy. I hope there's food in here. Food for me and toys for the kids. He meets these two linguistic professors because he's always at this cafeteria dumpster. And he goes, hey, you guys know all about languages and stuff like that. Have you ever heard this language before? He can speak it fluently at this point. And he begins rattling off this language. And the professors are like, we've never heard that before. Please just take our wallets and let us go. He's like, no, I'm not mugging you. Help me find out what this language is. And he started hanging out with these professors and they couldn't figure it out. He ends up meeting these other linguistic luminaries, LLs, as they're known. And none of them can place it. Some people say maybe it's from Tibet. Some people say it's from here, there, whatever. He would also, this is what I mean, he was obsessed with this. I think at a certain point I would have been like, okay, nobody knows what this is. I've been eating food out of a college dumpster. They don't even know what it is. I'm done. He would also go to bars in towns. Like when he went to a town, he would go to the bars because who was often at the bars? Sailors. And sailors who traveled the world. He would go to these bars and he would ask sailors, do you know what this language is? And he's like, say in the language. And the sailors would be like, "Arr, matey, I've never heard that once sailing the seven seas. It must be a made-up dream language. You should go get a job." It's one of his kids dressed up as a sailor. Fake mustache, fake tattoo. Yes, that language means get gainful employment and feed your children. He's like, what? Well, he did this all the time. He focused only on trying to figure out what this language was. Remember, he does know advanced physics. He could probably at least hook up with a physics professor, maybe do like, I don't know, I can't be a professor without a college degree, but I don't know, at least like help him clean the chalkboard for some money, for some Happy Meal money. Anyways, he's at this bar and he's talking this language and the bartender goes, Hey, boy, come on over here. Come on over here. And Mark walks over there and the bartender goes, I've heard that language before. I know exactly where that's from. Mark's been given a lot of leads over the years. People thinking it's from here, it's from that, this from there. But this bartender goes, no, I know exactly what that language is from. In the Pacific Ocean, to be specific about oceans, there's an island. There's two islands, actually. One of them you probably know. It got the big stone heads. It's called Easter Island. But the indigenous population call it Rapa Nui. But then next to it's a smaller island called Rapa Iti. And I'm telling you right now, boy, that language is spoken on the island of Rapa Iti. And he just goes back to washing his glasses. Who needs another pint of Guinness? Mark's like, that can't be real. Like, this is his first lead. We started having these dreams when he was six. Now he's in his early 30s. And he's been given detailed information as to where this language is from. The bartender's like, no, actually, let's go meet this girl. I know a girl from that island. She's here in town. Hey, Benny, can you cover my shift? I have to solve a decade-old mystery. Puts on his hat. They end up traveling to the house of a woman named Maratuni Make. She was actually a Polynesian, and Rapa Iti is part of French Polynesia. So they go out there, and you know the story, like apparently he gets a little nervous when he's at her doorstep and he like runs away, and The bartender's like, no, you don't, boy. You've been trying to solve this mystery for 30 years. It's time to put it to rest. Sometimes he just knocks on the door. She opens the door. And it's so interesting because although this is a real story, this has been highly documented. There's a lot of articles about it. You would start to see little variations in the story and some of the specific details. But some of the articles left out that he was digging for trash. So there's a couple articles like that. But anyways, he goes to this woman's house, this Mara Tooney, and he looks at her and he starts speaking in the dream language and she responds in that same language. So that's what was happening. If whatever quirk was going on, this old man in his dreams was teaching him this language that only around 500 people on the entire planet spoke. It was a language of the island of the culture of Rapa Iti. He was a French kid born in the 60s. And that was another thing. Sometimes it was like 10 years off, born in the 50s, born in the 60s. Since the age of 6, he was being taught this language that only about 500 people in the world speak. And also physics. So it's a weird mix. Who was this old man? Why was he teaching Mark a real language as well as physics? But maybe that's a mystery to be solved another time. Mark is just happy that he finally has relief. He spent his entire life trying to discover what this language is. He does discover what it is with Mara Tooney Make. And they start hanging out. Obviously, he's not just going to be like, see ya, that mystery solved. Now it's back to eating dumpster food. No, they start hanging out. They start really hanging out. After a couple of years pass, they get married. And he had two kids. She had two kids. They form a family. They decide to go to Rapa Iti. They're going to visit this island. That would be super exciting, right? He'll go there. He'll be charming everyone. Fluent in this language. Rapa Iti has a population of 400. Tiny, tiny population. You're going to stick out like a sore thumb, even if you weren't some dream weirdo walking around. Any newcomer to the island would be questioned at best and openly persecuted at worst. He comes out there and is immediately considered a stranger or an outsider, which is true because he's both. And Mark Liblin said about this whole thing, he said that when he was explaining the story to people, because obviously it was weird to have a French dude, even though this is French Polynesian, these are all indigenous people, to have a French guy who's never been on the island before, completely fluent in the language, but you could go, well, you know, you could learn our language. But then he would tell the story, right? He'd be like, it all started when I was 6 years old and an old man showed up to me in my dreams. They thought that he was having some sort of communication with their ancient spirits, which they didn't like. They didn't think that was good because they couldn't explain it either. I mean, we still have the paranormal origin of this story, which is funny because we kind of gloss over it to tell the historical part, and then we'll go back to that. But who was this person in the dream? Why was he having these dreams? Why was he so obsessed with his language? People don't trust him. He comes to this island with this family. People don't trust him. But luckily, Mark is made of stern stuff. They move to the island. Other than his family, nobody trusts this dude, right? Okay, I read this and I was like, dude, this guy's life, straight up, sucks. And I want you to remember this whole time, none of this would have happened had he not been taught a strange language by a strange old man in his dreams. He would have just gone on, he probably would have been a professor or something like that. He would have learned physics on his own. Or he would have been a manager of a shoe store or something. Because now that he's found his dream language, his literal dream language, he married a woman from that culture. They move to this island. He cannot find any work. Nobody wants to have anything to do with him. So what does he do? I was shocked when I read this. I was like, oh, poor Mark. It said that for 6 months, Mark couldn't find... I'd be so mad if I was given this superpower and my life was at this point. I'm assuming his wife and the kids are taken care of, because it doesn't say anything about them. That was another thing. Some of the articles said all four kids were his and hers. And then other articles said he had two kids previously and she had two kids previously. But so if there's little details that are different than the story you heard, I read a bunch of articles on it. It is interesting how some of the stuff doesn't match up. But no matter what's going on with the kid situation, for 6 months, Mark just couldn't make a go of it on Rappa Itzy. Let's assume, hopefully, that the kids and the wife are taken care of. For 6 months, Mark couldn't find any food, but luckily, his second superpower is the ability to forage for trash. For 6 months on Rappa Itzy, he subsisted off of fern roots and herbs. You figure you would spend more calories chewing and digesting a root than you would actually get from ingesting it. But he also ate green bananas. I could see like some hoity-toity restaurant selling this stuff, like from that movie, The Menu. Green bananas salted in seawater. Like I could see that on a menu at like a really nice, pretentious restaurant. I don't know why he didn't just let him turn into yellow bananas. People are like, hey, Mark, slow down, bro. That's a green banana. He's all, arr. They go, dude, like, you know, if you just like put it in a paper bag, wait a couple days, it'll turn yellow. And he's like, but I'm hungry now. He's all eating the, he's not even peeling it. Arr, arr, arr. Apparently, green bananas salted in seawater. But that's not the worst of it, right? This guy, you have to imagine there are certain nights where Mark was sitting there on this island and he was remembering wistfully back in the days when he was diving into dumpsters in France, pulling out like croissants and bagels. You have to imagine he looked up at the stars and goes, oh, if only I was in France and I had another dumpster to dive in. Because not only did he eat fern roots and herbs, you could probably get full off that stuff. Not only did he eat green bananas salted in seawater, here's the thing, he wants to be accepted by these people. This is not the way to do it. He's like, hey, everyone, I have these dreams. I know your language. That's pretty cool, right? And they're like, well, you're an outsider. We don't trust you. We think maybe you're like, have some sort of demonic powers. So we're going to ostracize you from our society. And he goes, well, how do I earn your trust? And they're like, we don't know. Just hang out for a while and don't act like a raving, bloodthirsty lunatic. And he's like, done and done. So he's eating herbs. He's eating fern roots. He's eating green bananas salted in seawater. But then he will catch fish and eat them raw with just like stick a wiggling fish in his mouth and start chewing at it. And scales and blood are going everywhere. And he's like spitting out bones. Kept mentioning something about a precious. Mark, we've been fishing for tens of thousands of years. You understand there's a process. It's really cool that you catch the fish. I imagine him out there with his fishing rod. He's super patient. He's sitting there all day long. It's bobbing in the water. He finally gets a catch and he reels it in. And then like Heathcliff just sticks the whole thing in his mouth and pulls out a little fish skeleton. You're supposed to be, we all know how to prepare fish. Even I do. And I'm terrible at preparing food. First step, wait till it's dead, right? At least I know that part of it. I might not be able to debone a fish, but I know that you should wait until it's dead before you stick your teeth into it and begin just ripping out flesh. So they didn't stay there very long. It only lasted 6 months. He couldn't get a job. People are like, it says here on your resume, you spend most of the day at the beach eating raw fish while they're still alive. We don't have an opening for that position right now, but maybe come back never. 6 months, they're there, and it doesn't work out for him. They move away. They come back a year later. Marcos, the indigenous culture, they don't have calendars, right? They don't remember stuff. And his wife's like, yeah, we remember stuff. He's like, oh, dang it. Anyways, they travel back to Rappa Itty. At that point, he is able to get a job. So that's really cool. He's able to come down. People have forgotten his fish-eating antics. He gets a job as the town hall secretary. And they're like, Mark, you know what? It's pretty cool that you know our language. Maybe we judged you too quickly at first. The whole time they're talking to him, he's eyeing the aquarium in the office. He's like, what time's lunch? Do we eat lunch by ourselves? Will I be given privacy in this room and this aquarium? They're like, ah. He gets a job as a town hall secretary. And then you figured this would happen. This guy, what's his specialty? Physics. And this language, apparently acting like a golem-esque creature, he ends up getting a job as a teacher. And he's teaching at this school, and he's teaching the children physics and metaphysics. He's done it. He's finally where he's supposed to be. It's almost like this old man was directing him to his soulmate. He never would have met this woman had he not been on this quest. He never would have ended up on this island and teaching physics of all things, right? That was the other thing this old man taught him to the children of Rapa Iti, so they would have this advanced scientific knowledge. It's almost like, yes, it took decades and it took a lot of torment and a lot of diving in dumpsters and eating raw fish to get there. But finally, Mark is where the old man, really where the entire universe was guiding him to, on Rapa Iti being a physics teacher. And then some guy goes, hey, wait a second, weren't you supposed to have a college degree to be a teacher? And they asked Mark, hey, you went to college, right? And he's like, well, I spent a lot of time on a college campus, if that counts. They're like, no, do you have a college degree? And he said, no, I don't have a college degree. Apparently, originally, he tried to say, yeah, I do have a degree. It'll take a while for it to get mailed here. And the people are like, okay, well, you can teach in the meantime. But eventually, they're like, dude, do you have a college degree or not? Because that's never showing up. He ended up getting demoted from being a teacher to being an auxiliary teacher, which I think is like a teacher's aide. And, like, that's fine, right? It is a huge pay cut. So now his family's going to have a hard time again. He's like, don't worry, kids. I've improved my fishing skills. And I hope you guys have all sharpened your teeth. They're like, Dad, no, we don't want to eat raw fish. Not only did he take a pay cut, he was also, this is just cruel. The school ordered him to back pay all the extra pay. They go, we should have been paying you as an auxiliary teacher this whole time. We were paying you as a full teacher. Now we're going to knock you down to like a teacher's assistant, give you a pay cut, and you have to pay the difference back until we get everything back that we overpaid you because you didn't have a college degree. So now, once again, him and his family are barely scraping by. After a long day of working in the school, he's sitting down in his house. Can't provide for his kids. Can't provide for his wife. He's sitting there on Rapa Iti and he's thinking, what was the point of all of this? What was the point? Takes a big bite of out of halibut. What was the point? In 1998, Mark Liblin died of cancer. And that was kind of the end of his story. And it is a story that you'll find newspaper articles on. It's a pretty well-known story, the story of Mark Liblin. But when I read it as a kid, I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. They didn't talk a lot about the fish guts back in that one. But I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I think it probably read like a shorter version. Wow, that's pretty cool. This guy had this weird dream. And it taught him something that was real. Two things that were real. Two things that are fairly complicated. A second language that's really only spoken by around 500 people in the entire planet in physics. The power of dreams, the power of the world of the paranormal. Like, first off, you do think it's just a dream, but then when you realize it's real, you're like, how would you learn real knowledge from a dream? It's fascinating stuff. But I think when you know you're reading it again as an adult, and again, Fabio, thanks for sending it over, it's really a story of obsession and tragedy. And I don't know if Mark was 100% like right in the head. Because, I mean, there's a lot of stuff to eat. There's other ways to prepare fish instead of eating it raw. You could get a job here or there. I think at one point he did, like, he did little jobs here and there throughout his life, but just nothing that he could really use to sustain him. Because he was always obsessed with this quest. And even though it's a story that has a paranormal beginning, he's given powers from beyond. Whether this was an ancient spirit from Rapa Iti, whether this was just some sort of cosmic force. There's so many questions about the story. Why him? Would be a big one. Who was the old man teaching him this stuff? What was the overall goal of this? Was it so he would meet his soulmate? Was it so he would return to Rapa Iti? But this, it's such an inglorious end. If it had just ended with him teaching kids physics in Rapa Iti, you're like, oh, so really, like, the universe needed someone of that skill set at that island. That's not where the story ended. The story ended with him being horribly in debt to his own job because of red tape. He had to pay back the pay difference for all the times they paid him as a teacher. It ends with him eating fish guts. It ends with him eating fish guts and herbs on an island that just kicked him over and over and over again. Kicked him while he was down. Just when he thought he was getting a little resolution, he was starting to realize why everything happened. No, they kicked the chair out from underneath him. And he's back to eating fish guts. And you know, and then he just dies. He dies. And I think it's one of those stories that had, we don't know what the point was. And sometimes, our next story, we're going to talk a little bit about this, but I think sometimes the world of the paranormal is as chaotic as the real world. It has no point. It just is. He was given this knowledge, but it wasn't for any grand scheme or anything that we can identify or even he could identify. It just was this thing that led him to this place. Had he never had these dreams, I imagine his life would be better. I'll say this, he probably would have eaten less raw fish had he gotten a job in an office and worked there for 40 years and got a gold watch at the end and then died of cancer in 1998. It may not have been the most exciting life. He would have spent less time talking to sailors and jumping out of dumpsters in front of professors and tearing raw fish to pieces on an island out in the Pacific Ocean. Yeah, it's right. It's very picturesque. It would have been a safer life, a life full of less turmoil, had he never had these dreams. So can the world of the paranormal actually ruin your life? I'd say, yeah. You take this story, a couple demonic possessions, throw those in there, getting abducted by aliens and having your eyeballs sucked out to be studied on another planet, while you scream in the darkness, I can't see, I'll never see again. And that's when you feel the buzzsaw being placed against your foot. I could say the world of paranormal could be pretty bad. But it may be even worse than you can imagine. Because let's take a look at this next story. And we might see how dangerous the world of the paranormal truly can get, even though I just didn't lay out a lot of examples of how brutal it can be. Cat girl, I'm going to go ahead and toss you the keys of the Garbinercopter. We are leaving behind Rapa Iti. Fly us all the way out to Ohio. Last Friday, we covered a topic. If you didn't listen to the episode, that's totally fine. We're going to do a quick overview. But the episode was called The Time Loop of Northwest Ohio. And what we did was we profiled the story of a young man named Bubby. That was his nickname, Bubby. Bubby says one night he was driving down this road and he reached a curve. And when he drove around the curve, he ended up back at the start of the curve. It was this time loop he was stuck in. He would drive straight. He would start to turn to this curve. On one side of the curve was like an open field and a house. On the other side of the curve was a forested area with a river beyond that. He's driving. The car starts to hit the curve. He immediately loops back to the beginning of that curve. And he was stuck in this time loop. Sometimes he he said. When he was coming through that curve, he would see movement on the forest side of the car, the driver's side of the car. He'd see something crawl out of the forest. It was this massive, pale, humanoid creature, and massive, I think it was like 8 to 9 feet tall when it stood up. It would crawl on all fours. It was crawling out of the forest on all fours in this very grotesque way. And then when it stood up, it got to about 8, 9 feet tall, and its head would bend backwards as if it had a broken neck. It's a terrifying sight. And when the creature appeared, Bubby would swerve out of the way and crash into one of the trees, and then he would start the time loop again. He said sometimes he wouldn't see the creature. He would drive, he would take the curve, and then he'd end up back in the beginning. Sometimes he would drive and he would see the creature and it'd stand in front of his car, and he would swerve and head towards a tree. He'd start back at the beginning of the curve. Sometimes he'd see the creature, sometimes he wouldn't. Sometimes he'd see the creature, sometimes he wouldn't. And this happened a few times, more than a few, right? If it just happened once, not a time loop. Until eventually he goes, you know what? I'm more afraid of this creature than I am of crashing into the tree. That's the problem. I keep swerving off of the road because I'm afraid of what this creature will do to me. I know what a car will do to a tree will do to a car. I'm afraid this creature might get me. But he's in this time loop and he goes, you know what? I'm just going to run the creature over because I can't be here all day. I might have been here all day for all I know. I'm going to just hit the creature. I'm going to gas it. When that guy walks in front of me, I'm going to slam into it with my truck. And once he had made that determination in his head and he starts driving that curve, he doesn't see anything crawl out of the forest and he keeps driving and he gets through the time loop and he drives home. That's the story of the time loop of Northwest Ohio in a nutshell. One of the things I love about doing this show is the community that we have built. We talked about this yesterday when one of you guys was able to track down a rumored tickle/snuff video. It's a crazy, crazy story. I'll put that in the show notes. We got an answer to that mystery. Because a lot of people were looking into that, but Po' Boy Peter on the Patreon Discord was able to match up some stuff. So really, that's awesome, right? I would love being part of this community with you guys. Leyland, also a Patreon supporter, Leyland, after hearing the episode about this time loop in Northwest Ohio, sent over a crazy theory. This is really, really cool. I want to share this with you. And unbeknownst to him, I was actually working on a story that might back this up. This is crazy stuff. So Leyland said, in his view, the crawler was predatory. The crawler is there in a predatory state. It could best be described as a spider. And the time loop was its web. He goes, imagine that a fly is flying around and it crashes into a web. Doesn't see the web, it crashes into it. It doesn't immediately go, oh no, I'm in a web. There would be a moment of confusion because they just saw a straight shot from one place to the other and now they've slammed into something. There's probably a little bit of a day, like they're kind of dazed from going at fly speed to zero instantly. And they're probably thinking, wow, ooh, that hurt. Like I flew right into this wall, but I didn't see a wall here. Oh, well, I'll just get back to my feet and I'll fly away. That's why I'm called that. And then they start to realize they can't move. They're stuck to something. And this fly is trying to move its little legs, trying to flap its wings. And from the fly's point of view, the fly can see the ceiling, the floor, and all four walls of the room. It still really can't perceive the web that it's in. Maybe it sees this tiny, really thin filament, and then another one and another one, but can it conceptualize, oh no, I'm in a spider web. It might see little contours, but the reason why the spider web is so effective is that you can't see it. We can see it. But if flies could see it, they'd be like, not today. They would just fly around it. The spider has laid this trap to catch insects, and it begins to walk across the spider web very easily. This web is no hindrance to the spider. In fact, it's a benefit. It created it, knows how to get across it. The stickiness does not affect the spider, but it does affect the fly. Leyland, I'll throw this in because I thought this was an interesting concept. Leyland goes, and I think he was just joking, but I go, whoa, dude. He goes, to a fly, a spider may be a cryptid. Because really, if you're a fly and you see a spider, you're dead. I'm sure there is a ratio of flies that get away from spider webs. I doubt it's very high. So imagine you're a fly and you've lived your existence as a fly, sitting on rotten meat, fish guts, poop. It's a good life. It's a good life to be a fly. And then you're flying around and you hit something and you're just laying there and you're like, what in the world's going on? Why can't it move? And then you see this giant eight-legged freak crawl towards you with massive fangs. And it starts wrapping you up. It's going to suck you dry slowly, keeping you as its food, keeping you alive as long as it can until you're nothing but a desiccated corpse. That's kind of the definition of a monster. And to a fly, it's not like other flies are like, dude, I just escaped from a web. You won't believe what I saw. And they're like, what's a web? And he's like, it was all crazy. A fly explaining that to his fly buddies. Like, he's like rubbing his legs together and shooting out pheromones. And the other flies are like rubbing their legs together. And they're like, no way. And he's like, yeah, and it had eight legs. They'd be like, shut up, dude. You're making stuff up. You're making stuff up. No, seriously. I was flying and there was nothing there and I got trapped. Whatever. Come on, guys, let's go eat some poop. He's like, oh, man. They wouldn't believe him. I mean, if they can talk like that. But I thought that was an interesting concept. To a fly, a spider would be a cryptid. It would be a monster they had never seen before, because anyone who'd seen it had died. Anyways, he says that much like the spider can set a trap for the fly that the fly cannot see, the fly cannot navigate, the fly cannot escape from, he goes, that could be what this creature was doing as well. He said, let's imagine that this creature created the time loop to catch prey, just like a spider would weave a web. He goes, what if this entity, this giant creature, created the time loop as its web? And when Bubby drove into it, this creature was sizing this prey up. It was human, which is entity we will assume wants to kill and eat humans, or kill and possess humans, or whatever. Nothing good, right? And this creature wanted the human, but this human's inside a 2-ton metal vehicle. And this creature is trying to size up how much of a threat Bubby is, what the different possibilities are. And Bubby is stuck in the time loop, but the creature is not. The creature can easily navigate around it, just like a spider could on a web. He says that he believes the crawler was sizing up Bubby from different angles, because it can easily navigate this. This is all theory, right? We don't have any proof. Well, we'll get to that in a second, actually. But this creature is kind of assessing the situation. It can take all the time in the world. It can easily navigate this time loop. Bubby's panicking, doesn't know how to make this stop. But once Bubby made the conscious decision that I'm going to ram into this creature, it then backed off. It may have actually even experienced a future where Bubby did hit it. It's navigating this temporal loop. Or it may have just heard his thoughts, or maybe he yelled it out loud, I'm going to run you over, you freak. But once Bubby had determined to run over this creature, the time loop ended. The creature was like, it's not worth it. Like, if he was just walking down the street, it probably could have had a good meal. But he's driving this big truck. I don't want to get ran over. Time loop ended. The creature ended its trap and he went home. Super interesting theory. I really appreciated Leyland sending that over. And I gotta say that he didn't know this, but I was working on something that might back that up. And to talk about that, I know this episode's gone long. I know this season's kind of gone along, but episode 1188, we did an episode maybe 2 weeks ago called The Endless Forest of Silent Screams. You don't have to listen to that episode, but a quick overview was a young boy with his brother. We believe the story took place in Iowa based on some other clues, but this young boy and his brother are in the forest hiking through a well-worn path that they had taken several times before. They're very familiar with this forest. It's right next to their house. They're in this forest. The boy, let's just call him Matthew. I don't remember the fake name we gave him. But Matthew, the younger brother, starts hearing a clicking noise. And Matthew's brother cannot hear the clicking noise. Matthew's like, how can you not hear that? That is so loud. And the brother's like, I don't know. I don't hear anything, though. Matthew takes a few steps back because he's like, I'm just going to walk home. I'm getting freaked out being here. He takes a few steps back and he trips. He feels like his foot sink into a sinkhole. He looks down. There's no sinkhole. His brother is gone, and now he's in this new forest, this place he had never been before. Looks around. Nothing's familiar. His brother's not there. He hears no sounds of wildlife, no birds, nothing. He takes off running. He's terrified. It seems to be this endless forest that goes on forever. He then steps into a sinkhole, feels like he's about to trip, looks up. He's back in the forest that he's familiar with, the one that's right behind his house. He hears his family yelling his name in the distance. He's been gone for a couple hours. To him, it had been like 10 minutes. He felt himself teleported to this new realm, this other dimension. We did that story, and we talked a lot about the dimensional physics of it all, what the tripping could have meant, all of this stuff. But one thing I didn't really talk about, because I just thought it was a detail. I didn't really go into detail about this detail, but the clicking. The clicking noise. August 2022 in Sussex County, New Jersey. Let's take a look at this story. We're about to meet a young woman. Her name is Susan. Her and her young son, we'll call Roger, often go out into this forest right by their house. They head off to this little clearing and they're setting up their picnic stuff. And Roger does this thing where he likes to mimic the sounds of animals. So if there's a dog nearby, he goes, ruff, 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 and the dog kind of barks playfully and all this stuff. And they're out in the forest, he'll do it with birds. He'll hear a bird and he's like, toodaloo, toodaloo, toodaloo. Or he's like doing what squirrels do. Nim, 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 nim. Nim, 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 nim. He just likes to imitate animals. Susan's setting up this picnic and Roger's just doing his whole weird animal thing, his shtick. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of her eye, Susan sees her son just freeze. He just stops. And then she hears him start to go, Mom? Mom? Susan turns and looks, and Roger is pointing up at something in the trees. Roger begins to take small steps towards to where he's pointing. He's pointing up at something in the trees, but he's walking towards it. And Susan, at this point, realizes the forest has fallen completely silent. There's no sounds of wildlife at all. Roger's pointing up at something in the tree. Susan doesn't see anything what he's pointing at. He's just slowly walking towards the tree that he's pointing at. She's looking up into the branches. She can't see anything up there. Why are you pointing up there, Roger? What is that? Mommy doesn't see anything. And then she does see it. She described it as heat waves. It was the form of a human. It was a humanoid body. And it was crouched down on one of the branches. But you couldn't see anything. It was nearly invisible. You could only see the distortion around it. You could see the heat waves. You could see the outline of this figure rippling. Kind of like the Predator. We've all seen that movie. If you haven't seen it, stop this podcast now. Go watch it. They're all good. I like all the movies, even the Alien vs. Predator movies. But it's like the Predator. It's like a cloaked entity. And she says, it was terrifying, right? It was super terrifying. It was invisible. It was humanoid. She goes, but the way that it was crouched down was not human. She said it looked like the way that a praying mantis would crouch down. It was kind of like breaking her brain a bit. Because one, she's seen something that shouldn't exist, an invisible creature. Two, it looked like a human, but the way its body was just angled, it looked insect. It looked like an insect. This glimmer man, that's the term used for this type of entity, this cloaked figure that people mostly see it in rural areas and in forested areas, but there have been encounters in suburban neighborhoods as well. All of a sudden, Susan sees it turn and face her directly. She doesn't see eyes glow, but she can now realize this thing is looking straight at her. And when it does start looking at her, she begins to hear click, 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 click. She's looking up at it. And then Roger does what he always does. Roger begins to go click, 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 click. Trying to imitate it. Maybe even try to communicate with it. Susan grabbed Roger's arm and they just took off. They just left. They got out of there. She goes, I left all my picnic stuff there. I didn't care. I grabbed Roger. We ran back home. She ended up telling a friend about what had happened. And the friend went back to that area and was like, don't worry, I'll pick up all your stuff. Oh, I'm curious myself. You might say I'm a Glimmer Man aficionado. I love Steven Seagal. He goes out there and the friend picks up all this stuff and waits there for like an hour and comes back and goes, I didn't hear anything. I didn't hear anything. I didn't see anything. Here's your stuff back. You know, an interesting experience. I did hang out in the woods for, he ate all the food while he was there. He's like, oh no, raw fish. That story happened back in August 2022. She had posted this in February of 2023. Like I said, I've kind of had it on my docket for a while. She goes from time to time because her house is near that forest. Like you leave the house, you go into the forest. Just like the story in the Iowa, the two boys, they said literally they walked out of their house. There was a forest next to the house and they would just wander off to get to the shoreline, this lake shoreline. They've been doing it their whole childhood. She goes, my house is close enough to the forest. It's really in our backyard that from time to time I can hear the clicking coming from the woods. I've talked to my neighbors. Hey, you guys ever hear that noise? You guys ever hear that clicking? You guys ever? She goes, none of my neighbors have ever heard it. But to this day, I still hear it from time to time. And she wonders if the Glimmer Man is ever going to come and take her and her son. Is it possible they got away from it for now? But it wasn't giving up so easily on the prey that it wanted to stalk, on its prey that it had so close to capturing back in August 2022. And what's interesting was, like, Leyland didn't know that I had that story, that I was working on that, but it does back that up. You do start to think that clicking noise, had the boy in that first story, the boy from Ohio, the boy from Iowa, who heard the clicking noise and then tripped and fell into another reality. Had he looked up into the trees, would he have seen a Glimmer Man? Is that what was making the clicking sound? The brother couldn't hear it. And in Susan's neighborhood, none of the other neighbors can hear it. Had Roger, because Roger started walking towards where the tree was and he was pointing up at the figure. Had Roger walked a little farther, would he have fallen into another reality? Where this creature, this invisible creature in the trees, can perfectly navigate. The clicking noise between the two stories. And it's what's interesting is that they both have clicking noises, but they both don't have Glimmerman in it. Like, one of them just has the clicking noise and the kid running through the forest. The other one has people in a safe environment, in a clearing, but they hear the clicking as well, but they actually see the Glimmerman and get away. It doesn't seem like the two stories are made up. All of this stuff could be made up, but it doesn't seem like the two stories are made up to back each other up. In fact, they took place in totally different time periods, totally different states, totally different witnesses. And just a few similarities. Really only two. The clicking and a forest. But is it possible that these entities, these Glimmermen, these crawlers, other cryptids we may not know about because the only people who interact with them end up getting killed? I'm sure there are a lot of cryptids and spirits and paranormal phenomenon that is unreported because if you come across it, you are dead 100% of the time. Is it possible they are actually using these interdimensional, temporal, spatial irregularities in reality to hunt and kill humans? Or even more terrifying, like Leyland was putting forth, do they create these gateways? Do they kind of hang out where they know that the fabric of reality is already a little thin and wait? Or are some of these entities strong enough that they can actually warp reality, create a time loop, create a portal back to their home dimension? I mean, there's a totally different level of power in that versus a creature living in a graveyard because they know it's full of phantasmal energy or something like that. There's a big difference between a moth flying to a light bulb because it's warm and an insect able to create a bioluminescence powerful enough that it is as bright as a light bulb and as hot as a light bulb, if not hotter. There's a huge difference in the power level between those things. But is Leyland's theory correct? Do we have creatures that can warp reality and build these spider webs when their only goal is to trap humans inside of them? It's a terrifying theory and a terrifying reminder of how terrifying the world of the paranormal can actually be. We have no idea how powerful some of these things can become. There's more stuff we don't know about the world of the paranormal than any other subject I can think of. Because there is no end to it. There's no set answer, as far as we can determine. There are secrets and mysteries involving the world of the supernatural that we don't even know are secrets and mysteries yet. It's something we're slowly discovering, and we've been working at this for thousands of years since the beginning of humans. We've asked questions like, what happens when we die? What hides in the darkness? And those questions we've never even come close to answering. All we have are theories. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be our email address. You can also hit us up at facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. TikTok is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal conspiracy and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day. I'm glad you listened to it today. Have a great weekend, guys.